Let's go.
It's time to attack. We're the smartest, fastest, and most vicious. We're going to put them in their place. We're coming on out. We're going to take.
Andy's going to fire deep. Puts it there inside the 10.
Look at Superman.
We're dropped by Edelman. Now they come on a reverse to the near side. And a quick run.
NFL fans, welcome
everybody to the inaugural episode
of Cover 2
with McMillan and Purdue. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm here at the round table with my partner, Fred Purdue. Fred, what's going on, man? NFL season is almost here, good brother.
What's going on, man? I'm fired up for this, man. This is a long time coming, and I'm fired up, man. We got a lot of good content on the way. This is a long time coming.
Yes, and for everybody out there who are not familiar with us, you know, we represent War Room Sports. Check out everything at the hub, warroomsports.com. If you're a college football fan, you can check out our show, Quick Slants, as well, where we give you several short podcasts per week on your favorite topics in college football. But this show here is all about the NFL. Once we really get going, it's just going to be a weekly show, an hour-long show. But since we're still in the off season, and we got a lot of football to, you know, to get to, and we're just going to lead up to that, just keep an eye out on the podcast network. If I'm you, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of good episodes a week while we get this thing revved up. But look, man, it's going to be an exciting run, man. I think the NFL season is going to be really good this year. Let me tell you a little bit about our show real quick. During that 60 minutes every week, you're going to hear three segments. Sometimes we might change the lineup if we have something special that we need to do, if we have to add a segment that's not a weekly segment. You know, sometimes we will be adding some things just for specific weeks. But every week you can bank on hearing Quick Slants. That's our first segment where we just run down some news and notes on the NFL and give some quick opinions on the stories. Then we go deep, which is most likely, you know, you can call that the main topic of the show. You know, it might be one topic, could be two or three topics, but we're just going to dive into those topics in depth instead of, you know, just giving little notes and things like that like we do in the Quick Slant segment. And once the season gets started, we're always going to end the show with our pick six. We're going to take what we deem to be the six best NFL games of the week, and we're going to give you our picks on them as well as our lock of the week. So, Fred, you ready to get into it?
I'm definitely ready for this, man. This NFL season is going to be I'm very interested because there's going to be a lot of different storylines. One in particular, I'm going to be following very closely. Some team up in New England, but you know, defending Super Bowl champions, those guys, yeah.
Well, we might as well, you know, for the folks that don't know us out there, we might as well go full disclosure right away. And we're going to go full disclosure, but we still need you to know that in no way, shape, or form does the team that we personally root for, you know, affect our opinions, analysis, and objectivity on everything else going on in the league. So once you get into this show, you know, leave the home team clowning to Fred and I. Like, every opinion we give, you know, you don't have to give your opinion and take a shot at one of our teams because it's not going to bother us. You know what I'm saying? We're here to talk about the entire NFL. And like I said, full disclosure for the record, I am a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and Fred is a New England Patriots fan.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've got that out of the way, let's get into our first segment, Quick Slants. Fred, two players have become eligible for the 2017 supplemental draft. Those players are Georgia Military College defensive lineman Tavares Bingham and Western New Mexico running back Marcus Rogers. They're eligible for the July 12th supplemental draft, and this was just confirmed a little bit earlier in the week. Now, Rogers rushed for 1,283 yards and 10 touchdowns on 217 carries for Western New Mexico in 2015. He also caught 61 passes, and he was one of the top offensive threats in the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference. Bingham, 6'4", 290, he exhausted his junior college playing eligibility after the 2015 season, redshirted 1 year, and played another at Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. Then he transferred to GMC for his final year. Academic problems prevented him from signing with a four-year school for 2016, but now he's turned his sights to the NFL. Even though this is our NFL show, Fred, being the college football expert, do you know anything about these guys?
These guys are so far off of my radar. Once you get to the supplemental draft, you find some gems every now and then. Guys like Isaiah Battle, fifth round pick for the former St. Louis Rams back in 2015, was the last guy that was selected with a supplemental pick. But you also had Terrell Pryor. He's going to probably be really good. I got a good hunch.
Terrell Pryor is about to be a Pro Bowl wide receiver.
Exactly. And Josh Gordon was the other one. He was a Pro Bowl wide receiver. And, well, we all know what happened then. So the supplemental draft isn't always a bad idea, but it's a very slim chance a lot of times that you're going to find premier talent. A lot of times there's a situation going on like a Terrell Pryor where he came out after the fact, after memorabilia and all the things that happened at Ohio State, and Josh Gordon having off-field issues in college as well. Red flag, anybody? But these guys are also very talented.
Exactly. My thoughts exactly. I'm thinking, like, for most people to even know the names in a supplemental draft, it had to be some sort of a situation where, you know, a player that you know had a situation and ends up going this route versus the quote-unquote normal, regular route. So we wish these guys luck. Move on to the next thing. This one is pretty interesting. Jim Mora, he's going to skip Peyton Manning's statue unveiling. Of course, you know, it's been about 7 years since Peyton Manning wore that Indianapolis Colts jersey. He ended his career in Denver, as we all know, but, you know, He made his mark with the Indianapolis Colts. That's where his career was made. So I think in this era where it seems like everybody pretty much gets a statue if you were pretty good for an organization, it just seems like that, especially in basketball these days.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to unveil a statue of Peyton Manning outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. Of course, his greatest accomplishments came with Tony Dungy at the helm, but what are your thoughts, Fred, on Jim Mora not being able to go and be a part of this?
Well, he couldn't make the playoffs, and now he can't make a statue unveiling. Very bad. He just can't make a lot of things happen. Jim Mora famously knows.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Exactly, coach. Exactly. You can't make the playoffs. You're just trying to win a game. But, you know, you couldn't get it done in Indy, and at that point it was over with. But Peyton Manning's coming up. He's going to have a statue. That's great. According to reports, the reason why he's not going to be there. He had some ill will and some bad feelings left from years ago, and he doesn't feel that he actually fits at this situation in this situation. Can we just make a phone call, Bill Polian? Hey, can we bury this? Jim Irsay, can we bury this? And then we can make bygones be bygones and call it a day.
Right.
Peyton invited you to come. You were his first head coach. Why is this such an issue? Are you trying to make yourself a story?
Yeah, and that's what it seems like to me. It seems, you know, kind of petty, because even in his explanation for not being able to attend, you know, it was all about his relationship and all about how he left, but none of that ill will was towards or coming from Peyton Manning, because by all accounts, these guys keep in touch. You know, they've kept in touch over the years. Let me read you Jim Mora's quotes. He said, "I had reasons. I would love to come back there, but because of the way I left the Colts, my relationship with Bill Polian, I don't know. I just wouldn't feel that I would feel comfortable being there. And I told him this. I apologized for the fact that I wouldn't come. I told him why I didn't feel like I should come, all those different things. I would love to come, but I think, I would just feel a little bit awkward there." I mean, and then add on top of the fact that Bill Polian is no longer a part of the organization. So if you're going to throw his name out especially, like, I just don't even – I don't understand. I'm not saying that Bill Polian won't be in attendance, because I'm pretty sure he will be as well. But if you still consider Peyton Manning a friend, you're still in contact with him throughout all these years. And in your explanation – you said, "I would like to come at least 65 times. Then you got to stop, like you said, Fred, you got to stop making this about yourself and, you know, go see one of the greatest moments in your so-called friend's life. That's just bottom line right there.
Definitely. Yeah. Despite Peyton Manning being the greatest regular season quarterback and, you know, never really doing much in the playoffs, two Super Bowls, one not really because of him, one because of him. Albeit, you still get a statue is a statue, and the greats do get this. They get this this bestowed upon them. He's one of the few that actually deserved the actual statue, believe it or not.
I don't think I missed those. Don't think I missed those shots you just took. Don't think I missed those shots that you just took. First of all, a playoff and a Super Bowl run isn't just the Super Bowl game. So to say one not because of him is totally ludicrous, because if you carry a team for 18 games and then, you know, finally somebody else picks it up and plays well enough to get you over that hump, I'm not going to knock him for that. So I saw them shots. I saw that. I see what you're cooking.
I tried to slide that in there, but I guess you caught me. You caught me red.
Yeah, I see what you're cooking up there. No doubt. But Jim Mora, stop making it about yourself. You know what I'm saying? This is not about you right now. Peyton was cordial enough to invite you. Do the right thing, homie. All right, speaking of great quarterbacks, Tom Brady, arguably the greatest of all time. Like I said, arguably. Some would argue the guy that we were just talking about. Some would argue guys that we aren't going to talk about during this show. I'm pretty sure I know who you would argue. Mm-hmm. But Tom Brady is releasing a book. Crazy part about it, I don't even think the book is finished, Fred, but the book has already hit number one on Amazon, so I guess they've been taking pre-orders or something. The hardcover edition of the book will cost $29.99 before shipping, and the Kindle ebook will cost $14.99. Now, how much do you know about this, and how many pre-orders have you made already?
I haven't made a pre-order yet. I'm still considering. For me, I understand that Tom Brady has really found his niche, I guess, when it comes to fitness and eating right, and he has this special drink that no one has. He just takes the Gatorade logo off the bottles, and he fills it with this clear white stuff that doesn't look like it should be – you shouldn't be drinking it, but I'll leave that alone. But
I know, before you start Drinkgate, let's leave that alone.
Exactly. And then on top of that, you know, you have the Blue Apron thing he has going on, where he has a very similar product, where you have food sent to your house and you can eat just like Tom Brady, even though you're really not. And now we're just going to put it all in a book. I mean,
because you don't have a personal chef like Tom.
Exactly. You don't have a house like Tom, with a kitchen like Tom. It doesn't
work
that way.
Your oven is not like Tom.
Exactly. And for me, when I look at this, I'm saying he's giving you a little bit of his world, and that's great. But if you're not a top-tier athlete, I don't know if this helps you a lot. For those that want to try to get better at eating a little better and having the motivation, and maybe an athlete helps you do that, great. I can't say I'll be buying this book. I may find someone to borrow it off of, but I can't promise I'll buy this.
You're not going to get the TB, because I failed to announce the actual title. It's called The TB12 Method, How to Achieve a Lifetime of Sustained Peak Performance. Like I said, this is a Tom Brady, not a self-help book, but a help you guys book. So if you want to live your life like Tom Brady, or at least the closest thing that you can do to living your life like Tom Brady, because I don't know if you, if you guys out there are good enough to get a model for a wife, you know, good enough to be arguably one of the greatest athletes of all time.
That
good
is
enough
the
to
disclaimer,
win
right? That you're not going to
championship after championships in your sport. Yeah, I think they should write this in small print on the back of the book, because I think a lot of people will go into this blind and thinking, okay, if I read this book, then it's done. I'm Tom Brady. But less than 24 hours after announcing that he'll be releasing the book, like I said, it already reached number one on the Amazon bestsellers list. That's pretty good. And shout out to, you know, our homie at War Room Sports, Jimmy the Blueprint, because his book, Sports, Smart People Only Read the Sports, it was number one on Amazon's bestsellers list, I think, for a day. That's a big accomplishment, because he's not Tom Brady. He's not as popular as a Tom Brady. I'm not going to say his number one was from pre-orders. It definitely was from a lot of hard work, advertising, promoting, and straight up, you know, forcing people to buy the book. But shout out to Jimmy nonetheless. It's
most
a great
definitely.
Book. Y'all should read that when you get a chance. Just go to warroomsports.com. You'll see it in the flash ads in the top of the site, or you can go to sportsthebook.com. It is a great read. All right, so shout out to Tom Brady, one of the GOATs, if not the GOAT. And funny that I mentioned Sports the Book, because, you know, Jimmy has a whole concept. You know, he has his own methodology about all of these GOAT arguments. You know, he basically says there is no best. There is no one best in every sport. So he has the Table of Gods theory. And, you know, most of the people that are in the GOAT argument are just, you know, people who sit around the Table of Gods. So it's a really good theory, a really good book. So everybody should go out there and read that, especially if you get into a lot of greatest of all time arguments. It might change the way you look at it, because I think it's working on me a little bit. Probably just because I'm tired of being in greatest of all time arguments, because
I
never
too.
Lead anywhere.
I really am.
Yeah, they don't lead anywhere.
I've been in a few when it comes to these quarterbacks and these corners and these running backs. So guys that shouldn't be there at all. I mean, who knows?
right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Some people are ridiculous, and they'll bring up people who shouldn't even be at the Table of Gods, but that's a whole other topic. Maybe we'll get to that before the season starts. We have time. All right, so the 2017 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, you know, was announced back some months ago. But what was announced this week was the actual presenters. Now, we know the class of Hall of Famers are Jerry Jones, LaDainian Tomlinson, Jason Taylor, Terrell Davis, finally, Kenny Easley, and Morton Anderson are all a part of the class, Kurt Warner as well. So Morton Anderson is going to be announced by Sebastian Anderson, which is his son. Terrell Davis is going to be presented by Neil Schwartz, which is his agent and friend. Kenny Easley is going to be presented by Tommy Rhodes, which is his high school coach. Jerry Jones is going to be presented by Gene Jones, his wife. He's probably doing that because of those photos he got caught up in. Jason Taylor, he's trying to win points back.
Yeah,
Jason
exactly.
Taylor is going to be presented by Jimmy Johnson, his head coach with the Dolphins. LaDainian Tomlinson is going to be presented by his fullback, Lorenzo Neal, one of the great reasons that he's going to be in the
exactly.
Hall of Fame. And Kurt Warner is going to be presented by Brenda Warner, his wife. Thoughts on this class, on these presenters, and Hall of Fame in general?
First off, kickers have no business being in the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
Kickers, punters. I'll be okay with a return man getting in if Devin Hester gets in and Dante Hall gets in, and at some point if Tyreek Hill keeps doing Tyreek Hill things, he keeps doing those types of things, he may get in too. But
I mean, you would also have to put Brian Mitchell in.
Brian Mitchell in is a, exactly.
The slowest successful punt and kick returner in NFL history. I probably could beat Brian Mitchell in a foot race.
I have a problem with kickers and punters getting in. I have a problem with Jerry Jones getting in, and you can flame me up for this one because, quite honestly, he's turned a really bold statement. It's the whole greatest team, America's team. It's not America's team. They're squandering in mediocrity, which might be kind of right, but they haven't won. After winning 3 Super Bowls, you haven't done anything else, and it's been a good time period. I mean, I was a small child last time they won.
It's been a long time, and me being a fan of a team in the same division as the Dallas Cowboys, you know, I would love to 100% agree with everything you're saying, but what we told, you know, what I promised the audience when we first signed on is I would keep it as objective as possible no matter who I root for. I'm going to tell you why I disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I disagree with you that the Dallas Cowboys aren't America's team, because at this point I don't really think America's team means that you have to win, because they have been steeped in mediocrity for the past 20 years. It's hilarious to hear Cowboys fans talk, because they speak with such entitlement, such confidence, such arrogance. And, you know, these days when you talk to them, most of them weren't even alive for any of the runs. And the ones who were, you know, they're still, you know, you got people harping on the success of 25 years ago. And then to take it farther than that, you got an older crop of people who's harping on the success from 45 years ago. But the reason I still think they're America's team is because no matter how steeped in mediocrity they are, we're always talking about them. Everybody's always talking about them. They're the most polarizing team in the league. Your team might be building up to that status, and it's only because of you guys. It's because of the fans. I don't think anybody would really dislike New England. But when a franchise starts winning, you know, its fans get a little cocky, get a little arrogant. You guys, in this case, since your run is still going on, hey, I'm fully for that. You know what I'm saying? That's what you guys are supposed to be. Cowboys fans, on the other hand, you know, delusional. But at the same time, the reason why I support Jerry Jones for the Hall of Fame is because, you know, despite the fact that his team has been steeped in mediocrity for the past 25 seasons, you know, maybe 4 or 5 good seasons in that time period, and like however many playoff wins they've had, the fact remains is that they're still probably the most talked about franchise. They're still the most valuable franchise in the league. So I think Jerry Jones, you know, I think his 3 Super Bowls early on is just kind of icing on the cake. I think they're putting him in there because of the business of football, you know, because of the, you know, accessibility of his team and the popularity that it gives to the league in general. So that's how I look at Jerry Jones being being inducted. But then, even if you wanted to argue that and say that made you borderline, even though it was 20 years ago, the fact that he does have 3 Super Bowls, I think you have to put him in the Hall of Fame.
If you spin it that way, I can start getting on the bus. I'm not on the bus, but I can get in line to get on the bus. But full disclosure, the Pittsburgh Steelers are America's team. They fit everything that, you know, the average American is, or what we think we are: hardworking, very explosive when we have to be, doing everything we need to do.
I don't know, man. I still don't know. Like, go to every city in the NFL. Like, I know you get around, and you know I do my stadium tour. I've been to maybe 55, almost 60% of the NFL stadiums and cities in America. Yo, you're not going to go anywhere and not find a huge contingency of Dallas Cowboys fans. Even in their – now, I live in the Washington, D.C. area where their most hated rival is. I root for, like, their second most hated rival. And you go to these cities and you're just dumbfounded by the amount of Cowboys fans that you find there. Like, there's never been a city – like, I think Pittsburgh is one of those teams because – they're a small community, but they're all, you know, all for one, one for all. They're one of those teams like Green Bay. Like, they travel well.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, and I think it's individual definitions of America's team. We talk about the whole, the entirety of America. I just don't see there being, there's so many Cowboys fans outside of the Dallas. There's so many Cowboys fans who've never been to Dallas in their damn life.
Yes.
So it's like
true.
It might
this
be for
true.
Negative reasons that I can talk trash about, but I still think for those reasons, I don't mind them being called America's team. And frankly, I don't care. I don't, you know what I root for. I want to have that moniker, America's team. What has America done for me lately? But that's a whole other story in general. But yeah, I give it to him, man. I give it to him. I was in the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, with an Eagles jersey on, and I started to hear people heckling me. I turn around. There's a group of Dallas Cowboys fans on the top floor of the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, heckling me.
I get it.
I just gave up. I'm like, all right, man, y'all got it. Y'all are everywhere. Y'all like
I get it.
Man.
I get it. I mean, even at the worst point in the season for a team, once they've gone home multiple times within that 25-year span, even at this year's Super Bowl, I had Cowboy fans, some in particular, really giving me the business down 25 in the Super Bowl. And then,
but,
you know.
Yeah, as if they were the ones who had you down 25.
Exactly.
That's the point. Like, hey, don't
you're,
stop.
You're at home. Your team,
they don't care.
Your team's at home. We're participating in the – even if we're getting blown out, we're in this Super Bowl and we're getting blown out. We've earned the right to get blown out. You didn't get this far. So
your team that you root for is sitting on the couch next to you watching us, but you're still talking. That's how it is, man. I'm telling you.
That's Cowboy Nation for you. You know that in the – of social media, this is gonna get flamed up at us, right? You know that we're gonna get a lot of hate mail.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And I love it.
I'm going to advertise the episode. I'm gonna let them know there was some cowboy hate going on in the episode.
I embrace it because you know, for me, at least on my end of things, I can say the Patriots have more Super Bowl wins than the Cowboys have playoff wins in the last 20 plus years. So,
right.
I mean, we can just start there and go down. I typically like to start at the top. So we can start there and whatever argument that you have, you can come with it. But I mean, a team that's really just shrouded in mediocrity. They're the ultimate example of mediocrity in the NFL. I mean, what, two playoff wins, average 8-8 record.
And one more thing, you know, besides the, you know, select few in NFL history who's actually gone out onto the field and actually done something manly. The whole kicker and punter argument, I've always been there, right there, but I'm softening in my stance a little bit, specifically for kickers. Like, we know punters in the league. We can name a few who are really good at what they do. You know, this dude is good for getting his team inside the 10, you know, and stuff, you know, getting them pinned back inside the 10 and all that kind of stuff. Hall of Fame, I don't know if I've ever looked at a punter and like, oh, man, he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think maybe we should loosen up on kickers a little bit, you know, because even though on most occasions they're not real football players.
Exactly.
The ones who might take a fake here and there and take a couple of hits once or twice in their career, you still, like, kickers are still all over the record books. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are kickers who are franchise leaders in scoring and stuff like that. And then, you know, you got the ones who just make big kicks at big moments. So kickers, punters, I think I'm still with you. No one has made an argument to me yet that would put me over the line on punters. But I think you could put kickers.
What's the criteria, though, for a kicker to get in? Maybe an Adam Vinatieri, three big kicks to get three Super Bowls. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big
Sebastian kicker.
I mean, it has to be longevity, because if you're a kicker and you can't stay in the league long, then you're not good. They don't do much. So if you can't stay in the league until you're damn near 50 as a kicker, then you're a waste of space. But, I mean, could you think of Morton Anderson? Did he ever go anywhere and end up getting a Super Bowl? I don't.
Not really. He just stayed in the league.
He was a damn good kicker,
50.
Though. You know, he powerful leg. So I think you just have a mixture, like, of your percentage over a long span, because I hate when they, you know, a kicker's been in the league for 2 years and they're bragging that he's the most accurate kicker in NFL history. Okay,
Matt
he's been in the league 2 years.
Give him some time
to miss a couple of kicks. God damn. But, you know, big kicks, I don't know, a long history of touchbacks, which is easier in today's game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly now with the rule changes.
Long kicks, and not just, you know, one. Oh, he has the record, but, you know, if somebody consistently is booting him in from 50-plus, you have to consider those kind of guys. So I can see it. I'm not sitting here saying I'm advocating for it, but I can see kickers. I can't really see.
You have to be
why
very,
the hell you will put a
very
special
kicker. You have to be very special. Like if I say,
and if you lead a franchise, Fred, like in points, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you have the at that time, like a Matt Elam, who had what was it, the league record at the time, a 60-yard kick. Granted, it was in Denver, and every kicker looks great in Denver.
Everybody sets the record in Denver.
Exactly. So, I mean, for me, you have to have had something special happen in your career for me to – I can give you maybe three really good kickers, and after that it's like, okay, go away. Go away.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it's not like every good kicker, not even every great kicker, should go into the Hall of Fame. You should have some special circumstances.
No.
And I do remember, like, throughout my childhood, Morton Anderson was definitely the best kicker in the league throughout my childhood. Never got into any Super Bowl situations where he was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Anyway, shout out to all of these gentlemen in the Hall of Fame class of 2017. It's time for us to go deep. We did our quick slants. Now we're going to send our receivers down the field. Our first topic of the whole podcast and our going deep segment is going to be a list. If any of you guys are college football fans and you do listen to quick slants, you know that it's list season and the off season for Fred and I. Fred does all the work. He's the list man. I don't even like lists. I'm just going to criticize his. But we're going to talk about the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL as they stand today. So Fred's going to give you his top 10 list. You know, I'm going to disagree with some of it. I'm going to switch some people around. But, you know, I just want to let you guys know, this is one of those group projects where one dude does all the work, and then we both get the credit. So, Fred, without further ado, let's send those receivers deep. Let's talk about your top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL as it stands right now in the preseason of 2017.
Okay. So, I'm going to preface this by saying I was very unbiased. I made sure of that. I also want to say that there are a lot of good quarterbacks in this league. And while we may have maybe – I hate the word – I hate giving that elite tag to every – this group.
Right.
I have really good guys at, from about 10 to 3 or 4. And the rest of those guys are elite, Hall of Fame, good. But there are really, really high-quality quarterbacks in this list. And I had to leave a lot of guys out because we're still building.
Because you only got 10.
Just full disclosure, I had to leave out guys like a Carson Wentz, who's building it after a rookie year, a Jameis Winston, a Marcus Mariota. You're leaving guys out like those types of guys. You're leaving out guys like
Flacco. I mean, those guys will have their time. Like right now, you know, Carson Wentz hasn't proven enough to even be close to that, so – But you know what, Burns, you know, before you start, because you brought this up, what burns it just burns me up when you have these type of discussions and these type of arguments when people talk about quote-unquote elite quarterbacks. I hate when people give elite a number. People are like, okay, well, the top five quarterbacks in the league are elite. You cannot put a number on elite. Just because they're top five, it doesn't mean that the first two aren't head, shoulders, knees, toes, miles, you know, just light years ahead of the next three guys on the list. So if that's the situation, then, okay, we're out of time when we only have two elite quarterbacks in the league. You can't force people into the elite. If you're not elite, you can be five and not be elite.
You really can't.
So that's just my two cents. I don't know how you do it. I don't know if you put a number on yours, but that that just burns me
up. Don't necessarily have a number, but what I do – building this list, there was a phrase given to me, and I really – I kind of ran with it. And what it is a quarterback the tractor? He leads the franchise. He's the guy. He is the guy. You build your team around him, and regardless of the situation – if it's you have 2 minutes left in a timeout and you're down four, do you trust him to take you down the field 9 out of 10 times? If he can do that, he's on this list. That's how I really – and if he's the trailer, then he's probably not on this list. He needs a lot of help, Andy Dalton. You need a lot of help to really – you need weapons after weapons after weapons, a good O-line, a decent defense, two really good receivers, a running back that's not all that good, but within the system it helps. And then you need a good coaching staff around him. All of that, and still you might make the list. So you have, that's what I think of quarterbacks in this league, is you're either the tractor or the trailer. Shout out to, I have to give credit to Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network for that one, because that was presented to me, and I realized, like, makes a lot of sense. So from 10, I'll start this thing off from 10 to 1. And for me, at number 10, I remember when he was drafted, and I thought, he's going to be really good. Albeit, I thought he'd win a Super Bowl at some point, but he hasn't. Phillip Rivers is at number 10. Offense, despite the offensive line problems, despite having to move to another city, he's been consistent. He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. It may take him a while, but I think he's really going to – he has a really good shot at it. I always thought that release was going to be something that really worried me, but he's withstood the test of time. He's had receiver after receiver leave, defensive player after defensive player, and even after LaDainian Tomlinson quit on him in the AFC title game years ago, he's really found his way back. And after a couple bad years, because that offensive line, I remember at a time when he'd snap the ball and he'd have offensive linemen in his hip pocket. That's how bad it was. And he's had chances to leave and he didn't, and he's still just turning along. I think his best years are behind him, but he's still amongst the best of the best at number 10.
All right. So, keep going down the list. I'm going to try to reserve my comments until you finish the whole list. If you throw somebody in there where it just seems ridiculous, then, I probably won't be able to hold my tongue. But just keep going down the list, and we'll try to talk about it after you finish.
Okay. So at number 9, I have Matthew Stafford, Detroit Lions quarterback. And he's getting at that point. He's getting up a little closer to 30. But he's getting a lot better. And believe it or not, I was one of those people that said – Megatron held him back, because great quarterbacks tend to be – they're able to spread the ball around. With him, it was when in doubt, throw it up. And if Megatron doesn't come down with it, no one's coming down with it. Well, now he doesn't have Megatron anymore, and it's spread the ball around. Hit Golden Tate. Hit Marvin Jones. Hit Amir Abdullah. Hit Eric Ebron. And it's making him a better quarterback, because he's able to go through those reads a little quicker. And we all know that the Detroit Lions defense is I've seen high school defenses better than this, and I'm not joking, because their defense is terrible. When I say terrible, I mean terrible. And they're putting it all on
him. I wholeheartedly agree with your assessment of Matt Stafford, post-Megatron, and I was one of those people who said the same thing. Like, this could be a good thing for him because he forces the ball to Calvin Johnson more than he should. And, you know, you can't blame him. He's a human being, and he was playing with a cyborg, so why not throw the cyborg the damn ball?
This is true. At number eight, I have, and I struggled with this one the whole time, and it's really not to put him a little bit higher, but Andrew Luck. I was an advocate for Andrew Luck, and from the time he was, I remember when he was at Stanford, I was like, this dude's gonna be real. He's gonna be a good one. He's gonna be a great one. And everything we saw from Stanford, he knocked off USC, and I was like, this is his coming out party. And then he lost in the bowl game, and then he went number one, and everyone thought RG3 was gonna beat him out for that. And then he's withstood the test of time there. Bad offensive line, no help from the defense, and yet he took his team to the playoffs his rookie year, had five rookie starters. I mean,
he said RG who?
Exactly. I don't even remember that guy.
Yeah.
Michelle
produced presents.
Remember your boy? Pop
yeah.
rocks and Tootsie Pop.
Exactly.
RG3 is such a noodle. But shout out to him anyway because he did just have a baby. So, you know, it's always good to bring a baby into the world. But this ain't about him. So, my bad.
But
just wanted to play Pop Rocks and Tootsie Pops real quick when his name comes up. I just need to show everybody how much of a cornball brother he is. So.
I was waiting for that one. That was the one I was waiting for.
Shout out to Rob Parker. Free Rob Parker.
But Andrew Luck has been everything you want, but his organization doesn't help him. And I think that's what's hurting him more than anything. I mean, you take your team to the playoffs the first couple years, and then you get to an AFC title game, and the only thing that stands in your way is Tom Brady. And at that point, I thought, this guy's arrived, and we're looking at greatness in front of us, and then the injuries and the interceptions and everything else, and you were like, this is not your father's Bill Polian Colts. This is something else. I don't know what this is. And he still withstood it. And last year, I thought he had a really good year. But I think what's really going to have to be put in place is a defense. It reminds me of the time when back in the day when Dan Marino it was a great offense, but you had nothing on defense.
Hey, Fred, the way I look at it, to me, it seems like the Colts just don't learn lessons. I think the Colts always had a situation, you know, first of all, they're spoiled. You know, you go from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. The whole Peyton Manning regime was them building the team around the strengths of Peyton Manning, even on the defensive side of the ball. Like, the defense wasn't really stout, but knowing that 75% of the time Peyton Manning in that offense was going to go out and get you a lead, all they really focused on were pass rushers. So when they had that lead, those guys could pin their ears back and get at the quarterback. But in knockdown, drag-out games, that defense really wasn't stout enough to hold up. It seems like because he came in and had so much success, I mean, because you can tell, as soon as Peyton Manning went down, that team went to 2-14. It's because the team was built specifically around him.
Exactly.
So you bring in Andrew Luck. He has success with the same team that just went 2-14 the year prior, and they're probably looking at it the same way, like, oh, we have such a transcendent talent that we can just build the team around him. No lessons learned. Instead of, you know, just investing mightily on the defensive side, investing mightily even on the offensive line. Because I don't know if people notice this, but I personally don't think Peyton Manning ever had a great offensive line. I think Peyton Manning was so unathletic and so cerebral, he made sure, okay, we're going to get this ball out of here in 2 seconds. And by him doing that, I think it made those guys look a little better than they were. Andrew Luck, on the other hand, is the opposite of Peyton Manning, where he does get caught in the trap of holding on to the ball a little too long, which gives you a chance to see that the offensive line is not that great. So they have to stop getting enamored with their star quarterbacks and just, you know, worry about building the team in that person's image and build the team like it should be built. Then you won't have to worry about it if he goes down. If his play regresses a little bit, then you can still have some success. But if everything is determined by the talent of your starting quarterback, even on the defensive side of the ball, I just don't think that's a great formula. I mean, the Colts were successful all those years. They got lucky enough to have a quarterback who never got injured until the end. But I just don't think that's a formula that you can keep repeating in the NFL.
Definitely. I with the way these guys are so athletic on defense, if you put a Denver's defense out there right now, a guy like Von Miller's eating that the offensive line for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and might have a snack later. I mean, it's the way these defenses are now. They're just too fast. They're too, and the schemes now are just so complex that you can't be extremely simple, but you can't. You don't have a semblance of a running game either, because Frank Gore, despite his age and him almost being still a 1,000-yard rusher almost, it's like you really have to reevaluate some things. And I think that's possibly why you see some shakeup there in their front office too. But speaking of a guy that you said building a team in the quarterback's image, there's a young quarterback. Young quarterback at number 7, and he just got paid. I'll put it that way. Really got paid. And that's Derek Carr. And I love Derek Carr. I've really liked him since he came out of Fresno State. And the one thing, he's no way like his brother. And no shots fired at his brother, because the Texans didn't do anything to help him. But In a new age of football where you can't touch the quarterback, you can't touch receivers, it's a bubble screen league where you have short and intermediate routes thrown, and it's very simplified, and then you have really good receivers on the outside who can't get touched. And by the way, now you're going to give him Marshawn Lynch. Well, and you may see him shoot up this list a little bit, but Derek Carr gets the ball out so quickly. He has a really strong arm. He had an injury this year, broke his leg, but I think that's not going to slow him down. I think he's going to rise up a couple more spots, because by default, guys are going to get old and guys are going to start getting injured and things like that. So I really like Derek Carr. I think I'm really going to like what they bring the Raiders, at least offensively, because they have the perfect mix of run and pass, and they have the pieces to fit. They have a guy like an Amari Cooper who can stretch the field, but they also have a guy like a Michael Crabtree who right now is an outside guy, but he's going to be he should transition well to playing the slot, and they get a guy that's a little bit faster down the field. And we know how much Derek Carr loves throwing the deep ball. And by the way, he can move. He has some wheels too. I look back to the game against Tampa last year. Neither team could really stop the penalties, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers let him run all over them for first down after first down after first down. And that was his coming out party to me. I knew he was going to be good, but that one game, I said, this is it. And he announced himself in almost like an Aaron Rodgers kind of way. He has that swagger about him too, like an Aaron Rodgers, that he knows he's really good, and he's going to let you know he's really good. But he's also off the field, he's so humble about it that he's very quiet, and you don't really see that from a lot of young quarterbacks nowadays.
And I think his brother, man, because he had all the talent in the world, I think his brother was a sacrificial lamb for the Carr family, because I'm pretty sure what happened to his brother in the NFL and the way the Houston Texans, you know, methodically just allowed that man's confidence to be shaken and eventually disappear, I think it was a lesson learned for Derek. And, you know, he's turning it around for the Carr family. All right, we got like less than 12 minutes left, so let's get down this list. Number 6.
At number 6, I have multiple Super Bowl champion. Could be he's declining a little bit, but Big Ben. He has a lot of weapons. This offense looks really good. The only problem is there's a team in New England that keeps him out of the Super Bowl every year. But he's still really good. I call him the big version of Johnny Manziel. If Johnny Manziel was a big person, that's what you would see. He scrambles around, finds ways to get the football out, and it does help having Antonio Brown, who doesn't. He is the definition of I call him 7-11 because he's always open. And that's really good for Big Ben.
And Big Ben always gets hurt doing that, but comes back
exactly
like 30 weeks earlier than he's supposed to.
Week three, he's going to go down, and we'll say, well, are the Steelers done? And then he'll come back and find a way to put them in the playoffs.
He'll come back
later. Down like 3 or 4
He'll come
games
back week
now.
Five after a 12-week diagnosis.
Exactly.
Shout out to
exactly.
Big Ben at number six.
Now, we're getting up into the creme de la creme, and I really wasn't a big fan early. A Super Bowl later, almost he loses a little bit of luster because I still hold it against him, even though I benefited from this. But Russell Wilson's at number five. You got to learn to make that audible on the 1 yard line. I don't care what Coach Carroll says. You make that audible, you're probably a little bit higher. But Russell Wilson
you're
is
a
an
two-time champion. If you take that into your own hands and show some gumption.
Exactly. I mean, Russell Wilson is exactly what you want in a quarterback. He can move. He can move and extend the play without having to actually be a true runner of the football. He's very much in the Aaron Rodgers mold, where he's moving side to side, just waiting on a guy to get open, and he can make plays. He turns it into backyard football, and I love Russell Wilson's game. They've evolved from being a run-heavy team to now it's on him now, and I think he's really embraced it, and he can only get better, but his offensive line needs to get a lot better because he's in trouble. He ran way too much. He ran for his life last year.
Yeah, he can definitely get better in the future. Aha, see what I did there? Let's go to number four.
At number four, I have Super Bowl, and that's going to be a theme. Well, kind of, sort of. That's a theme there with these next couple guys. At number four,
until we get to that Super Bowl runner-up that I know you got to put.
That's a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. But at number four, I have Drew Brees, the savior for the New Orleans Saints. Without him, you don't see a Super Bowl. You might see a lot of mediocrity, and without him, this team doesn't win anything, really. Between him and Sean Payton, they created an offense that I love watching. I mean, the downfield passing game. Drew Brees is the shortest thing I've ever seen at quarterback. I think he might be a little shorter than Russell Wilson, quite honestly. But he just finds a way, and it doesn't matter who his receivers are because there's a rotating door. Outside of Marcus Colston, he's never had the same guy at receiver, but yet he finds a way to find a deep ball receiver that can just – he can run 40 yards down the field, and he doesn't overthrow a guy. He's very accurate, and he does everything he needs to do. He's just really expensive, and that really hurts the defensive side of the ball, really.
Shoot, Marcus Colston was a 7th-round pick from Hofstra, so I'd go as far as to say Drew Brees might have done a lot to make Marcus Colston who he was. So
this is very true.
Yeah.
This is very
a lot
very
with
true.
Less.
Very
all
true.
Right, at number three.
At number three, we have Super Bowl runner-up and Master Choker. No, I'm being let me be nice about this one. Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan has been he was the number three overall pick a few years back, and he's really lived up to it. I mean, early on, you didn't have the big-time receivers, but he got his team back to the playoffs, got him back to an NFC title game back in 2012, got him to a Super Bowl, was within a half of winning one. He just didn't want to hand the ball off. He wanted to keep throwing it. Well, you know, that's what happens. But he does everything he needs to do. He has a strong arm. He's consistent. And that's the one thing that you're seeing now is the consistency, the accuracy. I'm very interested to see how he adjusts to not having Kyle Shanahan in offense in place going into this season now, because we all know how it is when you have a coordinator that's been there a few years, the verbiage is the same, and everything is the same, and you don't have to worry about anything, any mishaps in the huddle. Well, now there's going to be a little change. Let's see how he reacts to that. I don't know if he can move up this list. He might move a little farther down because there's some really, really talented guys coming up through the ranks.
It's the Falcons. That's right. Because they're going to get to the playoffs and lose. Watch what I tell y'all and watch what happens. All y'all Atlanta fans, go kick a big rock that stub your toe. I'm telling y'all, I told you so last year, and I'm telling y'all, watch what happened in the playoffs with them freaks.
Shout out, that's the homie, my former co-host on the War Room, PJ. Year after year, you never believed in the Atlanta Falcons. And believe it or not, that soundbite wasn't even from the Super Bowl last year.
Wow.
that was another time that the Falcons choked. But it's so fresh. The Super Bowl is so fresh in everybody's mind. We can play this soundbite any year, and you don't even have to know when it's from, except for the fact that I just told you guys. But the next time I play it, hey, we might be talking about the Super Bowl from last year. All right, so let's go number two and number one with our last few minutes.
At number two, this one's going to surprise you, but Tom Brady. And it was hard making this decision, but despite having five Super Bowl championships, despite being having the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, and I got to witness every little bit of it, Tom Brady is still number two. He's the greatest quarterback when it comes down to it, until maybe we talk about the next guy. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. And I truly believe that, because that's great that you had Joe Montana, and it's great that you had the Dan Marinos of the world, but Tom Brady has done more with less offensively than any other quarterback I've ever seen. And year after year, the pieces change, but the same production is there. And by the way, he was a 6th-round draft pick. I mean, still here, and he's about to be 40. And now they're giving
him. And that's what I tell people, like, because, you know, the Patriots these days, I mean, it's obvious that the Patriots are smarter than everyone, but people try to put that into the smart category. I'm like, well, the Patriots passed on him about 6 or 7 times during that draft, too. Like, let's not make them out to be geniuses for the pick, what they've done since. Okay, we can make him geniuses for that, but they passed on him a bunch of times, too. So he could have easily been somewhere else writing his story, or even not. Like, he goes somewhere else, this story may never even get off the ground. But it has, and it's a great story. So, I agree with you. And I just want to clarify this for the listeners. Greatest of all time, in Fred's opinion, you know, some people are just a little slow. They might be like, well, how is he the greatest of all time if he's number two on this list? Because this list is right now in the NFL. But body of work, you know, because we know who the number one is going to be at this point. His body of work is still greater than Aaron Rodgers. You know what I'm saying? But Aaron Rodgers may be the best quarterback playing in the league right now. So hopefully you guys can make that distinction and understand what it is, you know, we're saying here. But go ahead, Fred.
At number one, as you've alluded to, is Aaron Rodgers. I haven't seen anything Aaron Rodgers can't do with the football. You say make a Hail Mary pass at the very end of a game or at the end of a half and make sure it doesn't get batted down. There's about one quarterback that can make that happen, and that's Aaron Rodgers. How many guys do you know can put it where no one else can get it in the back of the end zone with less than an actual foot is in bounds and still make it where it's catchable over a crowd of people and it just falls right in? It was just a football falling from heaven. That's what it looked like. And we've seen it multiple times. I think the RELAX thing was great, and the predictions are great. I do want to see at least maybe one more Super Bowl. If he gets one more, because I hate judging guys on rings or titles, because I think that's it. Football's it's the ultimate team sport. But,
ultimate team sport.
So yeah. I don't judge a guy strictly on titles. But what I can tell you is that Aaron Rodgers does what most guys can't do. He can move back and forth within the pocket. That is what I consider a mobile quarterback. When you say mobile quarterback, you think Michael Vick or Donovan McNabb or Randall Cunningham. What I think about a mobile quarterback, a guy that can move within the pocket, in and out, moving his feet, keeping his eyes downfield, and Aaron Rodgers does that.
Any throw on the move.
Off balance, off of any platform. I've literally seen Aaron Rodgers make a throw falling backwards, and just it's on a dime. And I'm like, how do you do that? And he's done it to so many teams. So
everybody, lucky for Fred, we're out of time. It's like, but no, really, actually, when I look at your list, there's not really much I can nitpick at your list. Like, you know, we don't agree on everything too often, but I like this. There might be some people that we can move around, and if we have time during our quick slants segment of our next episode, maybe I'll tell you where I would move the list since I have your list written down now. But everybody, we just want to thank you for listening to the inaugural episode of Cover 2 with McMillan and Purdue. I'm McMillan. That's Purdue. Everything we're doing here you can find at warroomsports.com. Like we always tell you folks at the end of our shows, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. And we shall see you cats.
Going up to LaFell. Touchdown. The big screen. Center. Over the middle. Touchdown. Play action. Cutler wide open. Sonsenbacher.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.